This is an ABC podcast.
Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me.
This is the Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Till I come marching home.
Well, every night after dinner, my nana would quarter herself an apple. It's just what she did. It was a golden delicious, and she loved them because they were soft, they were flowery, and they were good for her false teeth, which basically meant that us grandkids hated them. Our apple of choice was Granny Smith, because growing up, there weren't too many choices when you're at the supermarket. There was red or green. But now, every year, it seems there's a new variety or a new size. Let me ask you this. Have you seen those really, really tiny ones that are like one mouthful, including the core? You could need to eat a few of those. But I've been reading and apples apparently have more antioxidants than half a punnet of blueberries, a cup of strawberries or an orange. But why and how many varieties do we grow in Victoria? What do consumers expect now? And as we come closer to harvest time, do we have enough people to pick them? Do you grow your own apples? Do you have a particular variety that you love? Or maybe you prefer your apples in the form of cider. Do you make your own cider?
On ABC Radio, Melbourne and Victoria.
This is the Conversation Hour.
Apples today. We are talking apples, and I'd like to welcome back to the Conversation Hour now the host of the Country Hour and a slight poll obsessive, Mr. Warwick Long. So nice to have you back, mate.
How do you like them apples, Rich?
I was going to say that, and I let you have that line, man. Hey, look, this show all started, let's be frank, because of your apple poll. Now, Pink Lady won. That was never really up for any kind of discussion, was it? But apples are big business.
Apples are huge business. Victoria is a powerhouse of the Australian apple growing realm as well, which is really interesting. Apples are grown in every state of Australia, but there are some states that grow more apples than others. And Victoria's a really strong area. We've got a number of growing areas that are perfect for growing apples, whether it be the flatter areas of the Goulburn Valley, where I am obviously in northern Victoria, but you've got central Victoria, the Harcourt region's got a lot there. You've got northeast around Beechworth has some fantastic apple growing regions. And then all these little pockets around the city too. Don't discount that. There are some fantastic apple growing areas as well through there and into Gippsland. So we grow a lot of apples.
We do.
And we grow a lot of different apple varieties, mate.
I know, it's beyond the Golden Delicious, the Granny Smith, and just the random red apple I grew up with. And I know that they grow some beautiful heritage apples in Templestowe, which is, you know, a suburb just outside of Melbourne. And we are going to talk heritage apples today. But in all your years of reporting and working in the world of ag, have you just seen more and more varieties just pop up left, right and centre? Because I tried a new one yesterday, which I'll speak about in just a moment.
Oh, I can't wait to hear about that. But yes, Rich, but this is not a new thing. There are thousands of apple varieties. And in fact, we've forgotten about more apple varieties than what we're developing at the moment. So many have either gone out of vogue or have been improved through breeding to become basically a different style of apple that a lot of the olden heritage apples have simply either been lost or sort of parts their genes are in something new. If you ever look up apple varieties, you can find that, I suppose, the ones you see at the supermarket or your local fruit shop quite easily, but you can go down into a really big hole on Google and find your way.
Or on an apple poll.
Yeah, or on an apple poll, but you can find your way into discovering these incredible different varieties that came from different things. A lot of them were specifically things like cider apples. They're terrible to eat, but they were good for something else. And as our tastes have changed and our breeding has got better, the types of apples we eat and the types of apples we see change as well.
I've upset some people that are saying Golden Delicious are not flowery, they are crunchy. See, I've never had a crunchy Golden Delicious, but maybe my nan was buying ones that were sort of, you know, heading towards their expiry date. So I discovered one was the Rocket Apple.
Yes.
So they're little, yeah?
Yeah,
and they look like
apple.
Yes, like you could pop the whole thing in your mouth. So I thought, okay, in the name of research, I stopped on my way home last night at my greengrocer. I bought some rocket apples. I took them home. I took photographs of them. And our family, we love apples. We cut them up every night and eat them after dinner to stop us eating chocolate. And works sometimes, works, doesn't work other times.
Sometimes you dip them in chocolate and then it's all done.
Or you have some apple with the chocolate on the side, makes you feel better. So anyhow, I've got the family all excited. We're like, guys, I'm chopping up this new rocket apple. Let's try it tonight. It's, you know, show tomorrow's on apples. Sat it out. We sat down to watch the news. My husband takes a bite, basically spits it out. It's like, that's the worst apple I've ever eaten. And my daughter takes a bite. She's like, oh, yuck. I'm like, what is going on with you two? And I took a bite and I realized that I hadn't wiped the bench after I chopped an onion. And it was just an onion that we were just eating an onion, like Shrek. It was terrible.
I was feeling sorry for the rocket growers for a minute. Then I was pretty sure I was going, oh, look at you, you developed a new apple.
I was so excited. And so I absolutely destroyed it. Hey, look, we're going to speak to Peter Hall in just a moment, who is a fruit grower. And because it's coming into harvest season, and there's been lots of issues, and you and I have discussed this in the past about whether or not we've got enough pickers and, you know, how we're going to go into harvest time. You must be hearing a lot of this, especially on the Country Hour.
It's incredible at the moment. It's not just things like fruit picking, although a huge part of fruit picking is labour. Nearly every agricultural business type or growing type sort of product that we have in Victoria at the moment, you constantly hear, oh, best season, best prices I've ever had. If you can find me some workers, that would be the best thing ever, because there are so many people that just simply can't find workers at the moment, and trying to find solutions to that has been, well, very frustrating for either the industry in dealing with different levels of government and just trying to find either quarantine solutions or ways to entice local workers out onto farms as well. So, yeah, hugely difficult. And as we come into spring, summer, I think it's only going to get harder.
Kerry just sent us a message. Rish and Wars, I love sundowners, but they disappeared a couple of years ago. I can't find those varieties anywhere.
Sundowners, an Australian-developed apple by the same guy who grew Pink Ladies, made Sundowners. Their name is Cripps Red as opposed to Cripps Pink, which is a Pink Lady. Sorry, that's me nerding out, Rish.
No, this
but
is fine.
They're still around and they're still grown. They are a bit harder to find, but I still see them pop up on the supermarket shelves, a bit shorter season, I suppose, compared to some of the longer stories.
In your family, if your sister or brother is the Pink Lady and you're the Sundowner, I mean, seriously, you are not getting any of the attention. Pink Lady gets all of the attention. This says, most apples now are kept in cold storage. Where can you buy them so that they're still crisp and fresh? And this is a big issue too, isn't it? Knowing what, unless you're buying it direct from an orchard or from a farmer's market, the idea of how long apples are kept, the urban myths of how long they're kept in storerooms, and what defines a fresh apple.
It's incredible though, because I suppose the flip side of that is, how amazing is it that we've developed better storage techniques, like massive cool stores, that we can keep Australian apples on the shelves 12 months of the year, when really there's probably a 4 to 5 month harvesting season. So obviously for us, the summer autumn period, you're going to have the best and the freshest apples. That's when the new ones are hitting the shelves and you're going to be having fantastic ones. You can look up what season's which and then buy accordingly, I suppose. But it is amazing that we can keep them as long as we can. The downside is if it's not perfect, that's when you get your flowery apple. And that's what the industry's working on, to try and make sure they do that less. And I think it is happening less often, but it still happens, and that's probably not good enough from a consumer's point of view.
I've heard this before, and this is from Simon. An apple has the same amount of energy as a cup of coffee. I have one pre-gym every morning. See, I've heard this, but really? Are you going to substitute your coffee for an apple?
I've had truckies tell me they've replaced coffee slowly with apples to try and keep giving them more energy as they've been on the job. I don't know how many are doing that. I'm just saying I've heard it a couple of times.
Hey, Barry is in Glen Thompson. Hi, Barry.
Hi, how do you do?
Very well, thank you. What's your question?
Can you still obtain a Gravenstein apple?
A Gravenstein? I have no idea. Was?
You know how I was saying more types of apples have been forgotten? That's one that's been forgotten by me. I have no idea, Barry. I'm sorry about that. Might ask our orchardist.
What were they like, Barry? What were they like to eat? Describe it for us.
Oh, they're a little bit tart, But like, I'm a pretty old man, but as a kid we used to eat them, and they're a little bit tart.
Okay.
But they were lovely.
And what colour were they?
Greenish.
All right. Well, we're going to speak about heritage apples a little later. So we'll Gravenstein, is that how you pronounce it?
Yes.
Okay. We'll find out for you, so stay listening. Hey, Woz, you're a busy man, so before we let you go, I actually just want to introduce Peter Hall into this conversation. I know that you know Peter very well. He's a fruit grower in Maroopna. Peter, have you heard of a Gravenstein apple?
Yeah, that's a fairly old variety. You won't find that in stores today, but yeah, it did exist.
And apples come in and out of vogue a lot, don't they? Is this something that you've seen change over your career?
Yeah, look, it didn't change that much, you know, up until sort of the 80s. And there was a sort of basic Granny Smith, Red Delicious, Jonathan, some of these sort of old established varieties. But in the 80s and 90s, a lot more breeding programs sprung up around the world, and we just saw an avalanche of new varieties sort of come onto markets and become available to growers. I think there's about 7,500 different varieties in the world.
Are you serious?
Actually.
Yeah, I found 12 the other day and I thought that was a lot.
And Peter, how hard does that make your job as a grower when there are so many different varieties? There's New Zealand, Belgium, Japanese, Australian developed varieties, American developed varieties. How hard is it for you to pick what to grow, thinking that in 5 to 10 years' time a supermarket's going to want to buy it?
Yeah, look, it's a real challenge. I mean, it takes, you know, 4 to 5 years to get a fruit tree up and going. And in that time, I've experienced this, we've had a variety, we've planted it, we've started to commercialise it, and suddenly it's not wanted anymore. And that's a real challenge for a grower, and I think equally for a consumer. It must be very confusing at times when they walk into a retail store and see a whole lot of different apples out there. Although it's great from a variety point of view, it's great to taste and try new apples. So whilst it's a bit of a challenge, I think it's an exciting sort of arena to be in, but it's very difficult for growers. Correct.
Peter, are people getting, I guess, better and more understanding when not expecting the perfect looking apple now and to be a perfect size for lunchboxes? You know, I guess embracing the concept of ugly fruit?
Look, I'm not sure about that. I think visual looks of anything you eat a king, within reason. I mean, if it tastes like cardboard, it might look great, but you still got to stick it in your mouth. So that's a bit of a challenge. But I think generally it's got to have some visual appeal, and that's probably led to more popular lines of red hued apples or apples that have some distinctive colour about them. But ultimately, it will come down to, for a grower, is it a commercial variety? Can it store for a good length of time? Is the taste suitable for say, the Australian palate? Does it grow in volumes that are commercially acceptable? You know, does it crop well on a tree? Is it easy to grow? Oh, does it grow in a certain climate? There's a whole range of issues there we have to sort of assess.
Hey, Peter, we're going to pop you on hold and we'll come back to you in just a moment because we want to speak about leading into harvest time and, you know, what this year looks like for you and where you're going to find workers from in just a moment. Warwick Long, it's been so nice to hang out with you. Just really quickly, mate, in Shepparton, we know at the moment, how are you travelling and how is everyone, well, not actually, you probably do know everyone in Shep. What am I talking about? But how is your community travelling at the moment?
Look, it's been, I think, a tough time for the community to be in the limelight. Nobody wants this to happen to their community, to have a coronavirus outbreak in the community. I think over a third of townspeople were in isolation at some point with so many places hit, so many schools hit as exposure sites. And generally, everyone's been really good at keeping in isolation. There's been a lot of help with trying to get food to people and take people's dog to the vets and things like that. So that's been a really good side. But look, it has been tough. I won't sugarcoat it. But I think the community's going pretty well at responding at the moment. Let's just hope we see the numbers go down.
Yeah. Mate, we wish you all the best and we really do hope the numbers come down. Of course, our regional listeners can hear you in just over half an hour's time on the Country Hour. Hey, it's been so nice to hang out. What's your next poll on?
I've just put it up for you, Rochelle. It is your favourite sweets that you buy from a country bakery. So custard tarts, vanilla slices, jelly slices, coffee scrolls, they're all there. 32 options. Try and pick your favourite.
Does party pies fall into that?
No, that's savoury. We'll do savoury another day. Don't worry. Don't worry. Pie flavours, definitely on the list. I will do that.
Warwick Long will be on your wireless in the regions from midday on the Country Hour. So nice to have you back here on the Conversation Hour.
Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me.
This is the Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
Anyone else but me. No, no, no. Don't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. Till I come.
And we're talking all things apples today. We're coming into harvest season. Are we going to have enough pickers in order to fill the huge appetite that we have for apples? But also looking into heritage apples and all of the varieties of apples that we now grow in Victoria. Many of you are talking about the Gravestine apple and that it is. Now, this is a little tip here. This comes in from Ned saying that there is a heritage Gravestine apple tree on the Hamilton Highway on the roadside between Mortlake and Hexham. He says, beautiful for cooking, great with pork or apple crumble, but I'm not telling you exactly where it is. Well, Ned, it sounds like you're onto a good thing there. This brings back the Lady William tart, late season, great for eating. That's from Trudy in Safety Beach. And I love this text from Wendy. My son's bedroom frame around his door. He sticks all, and she sent me a photograph. He sticks his little apple stickers there. It goes now all the way down to the floor. He puts one there every time he eats an apple. It now runs out of the room, and I'm loving this conversation. Maybe some of the apples that you've seen disappear that you would like to come back, or maybe you make your own cider as well. We're going to be talking that in just a moment. But we were chatting to Peter Hall. He's a fruit grower in Maroopna. Peter, lots of people are sort of reminiscing about some of these older style apples. Lady William is one that people are saying they haven't seen for some time. And lots of people talking about how it will just grow on the roadside. Is that something that's common?
I think certainly around our area there's the odd spot where there's a tree, that not just apples but other fruit trees have grown sort of as seedlings. So, yeah, you will find a few wild apples out there on roadsides. They'll often be a seedling and they may not be particularly true to type. So in some cases it can be a new variety altogether.
How tricky are they to grow? Like how much love and attention do they need? Is it something that if they're growing on the roadside on their own, do you need to kind of treat them like babies on an orchard, or are they something that kind of look after themselves and are pretty hardy?
No, look, Australia's a challenging place to grow fruit. There's a lot of pests and diseases that apples as well as every other fruit tree gets. So generally we have to put in some control measures, particularly for insects. And Queensland fruit fly is probably one of the most challenging ones for roadside apple trees. As a matter of fact, we have a program in our region to remove roadside apple trees so they don't become a pest and disease point of contact.
So is there something if people see them? I mean, even though Ned's keeping it, close to his chest, should people actually report whether or not if there are apple trees growing somewhere, if it becomes an issue for growers like yourself?
Yeah, particularly in fruit-growing regions, because they do become a source of infestation of insects of all sorts. So it's a bit of a shame, because sometimes there might be some great fruit on them, but eventually they become disease-ridden or infested with insects, so they probably need to be removed.
Do we have too many varieties now, Rob? Earlier before the press conference, you were talking about, if all of a sudden there is an appetite for a new particular type of apple, whether it be size or colour or taste or whatever, by the time you grow it and harvest it, if it's gone out of fashion, then that's a lot of time and effort and money that you've potentially lost as a grower. Do we have just too much choice now?
Oh, look, I think that there is a danger of that, and I think the retailers have responded to that by having seasonal apple windows. I noticed, for example, there's a great apple called Modi that comes in February, and that comes on for a few weeks or a few months. And then it drops off the charts for a while. Then it comes back again later on in the year. I think that's one response by having, a little window where you get to try one of these new apples. And then at the same time, have the staples there, your Pink Ladies, your Granny Smiths, You know, your Red Delicious and some of the others that people just want to see on a consistent basis. So that's usually how the retailers approach it. It's probably not a bad solution for a very crowded field. And like I said before, there's a lot of apples being developed. Everyone wants a new apple to get a marketing edge. So, you know, there's another one being presented to consumers. And it's a bit of a challenge, I think, to sort of manage that space.
While we have you, let's have a chat to Jenny. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hello. What sort of apples have you got where you are?
I've got three apple trees. I've got a Jonathan, a Granny Smith, and a Gravenstein.
So they're all kind of old school, very tart type apples, aren't they?
Well, I wouldn't. I like all of them. The Granny is obviously for cooking, but the Gravenstein, I got that one first, and it's a tripole, so it actually needs two separate pollinating varieties.
What made you start to grow apples?
Well, you eat them.
I know, but this is, you've got three apple trees, Jenny. Not everybody grows apples.
Yeah, but I mean, well, grannies are self-pollinating, so you could just have one. Johnny needs a pollinator, and as I said, the Gravenstein needs two pollinators, so... yeah, that's why I've got three.
Do you know what I'm interested in? And a few people have even said this to Warwick Long, you know, about his poll and the Granny Smith, is that, oh, they're just like, oh, you know, they're just the cooking apple. I love eating them. Do you not just eat them like an apple, Jenny?
Absolutely.
Oh, good. Okay, I'm not alone. This is all I wanted to know. Jenny, good on you. Granny Smiths, Peter, where are they at? Are they becoming fashionable again? Are they so daggy they're cool?
No, look, they've always been a staple. They've always been available in the Australian retail space. We grow a lot ourselves. Most apple growers, certainly in the GV, would have at least a block of Granny Smith apples. They're probably the world's best cooking apple. So I'd be very surprised if anything knocked Granny Smith off its perch.
Just finally, Peter, on a serious side, I mean, we obviously all love our apples and we've got so many varieties now and things that we love to do with them. And, you know, everything from Snow White apples to heritage apples, which are coming back in vogue. How are we going to go about harvesting them this year? You know, you've had a really, really tough 18 or so months in terms of being able to find staff. And when I say you, I guess I'm talking about the industry as a whole. Where are you at coming into harvest season, which is only a month or two away?
Look, it's a real challenge. We just got through last season. You know, a lot of the Pacific Islanders have gone back. The Australians... a few locals tried it and a few Australians tried it, but, I mean, the reality is Australians don't want to do that sort of work, and that's no judgment on people. It's just it's something that's probably moved beyond Australians' interest to do that type of work. There's other jobs that are around. So we're really highly dependent on another source of labour. Look, the federal government have introduced a foreign workers visa to come in specifically for agriculture. I think it's an agricultural visa. That's a sort of a point that we think is worth developing. The difficulty with that is each state government's got this border management process that makes it really difficult. And you know, if I could encourage the state government, they really need to do something about this. Last year, they left it too late and they eventually got Tasmania to bring some workers in for us. You know, if I could encourage them, could you really get on board with the agricultural visa of the federal government? And get that happening, get some agreement. We don't want to see a stoush between state and federal governments again.
And so what happens if something doesn't get across the line? Are you worried about wastage? Will apples just literally fall the ground?
Yeah.
What will happen?
Yeah, look, if we don't get the workers to pick our crop, we won't be able to harvest what we've put a lot of investment into. So we're starting to invest now. We're at the moment pruning. We're busy out there. I've got guys out there pruning. I've got people out there getting irrigation ready. So we're actually investing right now for a crop we pick in sort of, you know, 8-10 months' time. This is one of the biggest issues for us. If we spend all that money and get our crop up and then suddenly the state government hasn't been able to solve this issue for us, we've got a real problem again. We had a problem already and we'll have it again. And that's a real concern for the fruit industry.
How much of it is picked by hand and how much of it is done by machine?
Look, there's no fruit at the moment that's picked by machine. So everything has a hand actually grasping it and plucking it from a tree. There's some assisted platforms And some machines that allow us to get close to the tree and make it easy for a picker to place it on a conveyor in a bin. But every piece of fruit that you eat will be touched once by someone as they pick it from a tree. So we need people's hands to go and take that fruit, pick the right one from the tree, put it in a bin for us so we can then process it and send it off to a retail market.
We've discussed at length the shortage of pickers on this program, and people can go back into the conversation, our podcast and feeds, and listen to that. But if people are listening now, Peter Hall, and think, actually, you know what, I would totally do that work, is there websites, are there places they can go to look at, you know, where is available and what the conditions and the pay are and start to investigate it, if it is a line of work that they might consider?
Yeah, there is. There's a couple of state government sites, and they did spend, to their credit, they spent some time trying to encourage locals, Victorians, to come and work. Fruit Growers of Victoria also have a website where there's some links there to jobs. As the season approaches, you'll see a lot more advertising being conducted again. But the reality is we will welcome anyone from Victoria or Australia to come and pick. It just wasn't the case last season, and so we're really hoping that this agricultural visa can get off the ground so that we can get another source of labour.
Peter Hall, thanks so much for your time.
Great, thanks very much.
Good on you, mate. Peter Hall, he is a fruit grower in Mooroopna, talking all things apples today, 1300 222 774. Some of the older varieties as well. We will talk heritage apples in just a moment. But Chris is in Yennar South. Chris, you consume your apples in a different form.
Yes, Rochelle, we do. My husband and I make cider and we love it.
So you make your own cider. How long did it take you to perfect that?
It took us a couple of years. We started with an apple tree when we had an excess of apples, and I suggested to my husband that he make cider because I love the cider. And it's all like a big science experiment, and it took us a couple of years, and we perfected it, and we make good cider.
Fantastic. And is this something now you share with friends or, you know?
Yeah, we do. We share it with our friends. We're now starting to grow different varieties of apples that are better suited for the cider, that have more tannins in them. They're not really good for eating, but great for cider.
Good on you. That's so wonderful. What does it taste like? Is it sweet? Is it cloudy? I'm not really a cider drinker.
We have, it's sort of sweet. It has some beer flavours to it, you know, some of those bitter tastes. But it's, once you start drinking homemade cider, you will never go to a commercial cider again.
Well, we're going to talk to someone who was trying to, but thanks to COVID, it didn't go ahead, a cider festival. So before you know it, Chris, you might be at a cider festival.
Who knows?
Good on you, mate. Thank you. This text here from Louise, great discussion. We've got a 45-year-old King Cole apple, which still grows magnificent, crisp, tasty apples. One of the bigger ones this year was 450 grams. Not sure if you can still buy these. Oh, my gosh, that's a fair old decent-sized apple, isn't it? Tom's in South Gippsland as well. Tom, you're a cider man as well.
I am indeed. I'm very passionate about our cider down here. We've got about 8,000 heritage cider apple trees. We've got English and French varieties like the Somerset Red Streak, the Kingston Black, Yarlington Mill, the Jeannette, the Frequin Rouge. So a huge selection of these overseas varieties, including some of our South Gippsland varieties that we have actually taken grafts from the roadside apple trees and put into our own orchard. So we have things like the Warrigal Wrangler and the Torres Stone Block, a collection of these, local apple varieties that we use to make our cider down here.
I am so impressed by this. I'm very passionate about South Gippsland anyhow, but knowing that there are particular varieties to South Gippsland and the fact that some of those have come from seeds on the side of the road, where did you start out, Tom? Was it looking at sort of apple orchards or did you start with cider? How did this passion come about?
Well, as you might be able to tell, we're originally from Somerset, which is, you might say, one of the heartlands of cider making, and we came across to Australia, and unfortunately at the time there wasn't as many of the English style apples over here, all the ciders, so we had to start making it ourselves, and that was about 10 years ago, and one thing evolved to another, and we put in a big cider apple orchard and have started making our own apple ciders over here. And they are very different to the commercial ciders. They're much more dry. There's a little bit more length and tannin in the flavour. It's a little bit, we like to describe it as apple wine.
Good on you. Lovely to hear from you. Thank you. Gornja is in Elwood. Hi.
Hello. I've got a question about cooking apples.
Mm-hmm.
So I know people use Granny Smiths here for cooking, but I come from Ireland and we used to be able to grow and buy in supermarkets cooking apples. So they were huge and they were far too bitter to eat normally, but they were really juicy when they were cooked. And I don't understand why I've never seen them available here.
No, I have no idea. Gornja, let's have a chat to Rob Pelletier. Now, he's actually from Beaufort Heritage Fruit Trees. Rob, uh-huh. I mean, do you know cooking apples? Are they something that is still really hard to get?
No. Well, they're hard to buy. Granny Smith is probably the only one that... Oh, Gravenstein's often a bit of a cooker too. It's because they're high in acid, and some people, when they're eating them, find them a little bit strong or tart on the tongue, and that's because of their high acid content. Other people love them. So they're both good cookers, Gravenstein and Granny Smith. I think I heard Peter earlier say he thought Granny Smith might be one of the best cooking apples in the world. The English and possibly the Irish and the Scottish would give you an argument about that, and they would say it's Bramley seedling.
Did you agree, Gornja?
Well, maybe they were Bramley. I didn't think they were, to be honest, because I've seen Bramleys that are much smaller. These were much bigger, and there's no way you would eat it as an apple. I mean, Granny Smiths are perfectly okay to eat, normally uncooked, but these were very bitter. You would have to put sugar on them, and you wouldn't.
Well,
you barely hold one in one hand. So they're sort of flat as well, not maybe as round.
There are some very large apples, up to even 600 or 700 grams, almost a couple of pounds in size. But Bramley is a great cooker. We get a lot of people who come from England or have been there and have tried Bramley and want to get hold of a Bramley seedling. The difference between it and Granny Smith is Bramley, when it reaches a certain temperature, and there is a cooking apple that originated in Ballarat in Australia, which does more or less the same thing. When it reaches a certain temperature, it just turns into a puree. And so it's great for sauces and things like that. Whereas Granny Smith, its real benefit is it keeps its shape as you cook it. So if you make an apple pie and you want pieces of apple on it, a Granny Smith is a much better choice than a Bramley. But for a lot of other dessert-type ideas with apples, the Ballarat seedling, or Stewart seedling as it's called, it's also called Ballarat, is an Australian apple discovered in, I think, Mrs. Stewart's garden in Ballarat in the 19th century, a bit like Granny Smith's was discovered in Mrs. Smith's garden in Ryde in Sydney early in the 19th century, and they're both good Australian apples.
Well, Gornja, hopefully that helps you. Rob, you just reminded me when you're talking about apple going to puree, and my daughter, when she was a baby and a toddler, absolutely loved pureed apples. So I'd puree it and I'd section it up and I'd put it into the freezer. But I also used to do that with cauliflower. Now, here's a little side tip. Frozen cauliflower and frozen pureed apple look identical. And when
really?
You put frozen cauliflower onto your daughter's Weet-Bix and wonder why she's not eating her breakfast, you figure it out pretty quickly. Hey, there's been a lot of reminiscing around certain types and varieties of apples and heritage apples, but lots of people also telling us where we can get them. Are heritage apples back in vogue?
I think I've found over the last 20 or 30 years that people have moved further and further into having a strong and detailed interest in growing their own food. You won't find a lot of the heritage varieties coming back into the mainstream because, quite frankly, the reason the growers moved on from them is because they're not that easy to grow, they're not that reliable. But the tastes and, you know, even, Rochelle, more importantly almost, it's the stories that go with them. You know, there's some tremendous stories and memories. We get a lot of people who in my vintage, let's say advanced middle age, grew up eating snow apples. And so they're a brilliant apple, but they're no longer grown much by the growers, by the commercial growers.
Although I've had a lot of people here, and I bought some from the farmer's market just recently, and when I went back there on the weekend, I said, have you got any snow apples? He said, oh, no, they're out of season. But lots of people had been texting in about snow apples, so I feel like they're starting to come back more.
They are, and you just hit the nail on the head. The place where you'll get the greatest variety of apples, and you will get them in season, is at farmers' markets. Now, I understand the mainstream food system has to have cool storage. You have to store food because apples don't start arriving fresh until maybe, well, the very early ones are ripening just after Christmas. But generally speaking, the commercial growers in Australia are starting to harvest in February or March. Now, we want to be eating apples all year, so they've got to go into cool storage. But if you want to get a bigger range of apples and eat them fresh without that kind of 3 or 4 or 6 or even 12 months in a cool store, your farmer's market's the place to go. And they won't necessarily have massive amounts of them. They'll be harvesting off 4 or 5 trees, and then when they're gone, they're moving on to the next variety. And that's where you'll find them.
And why is wax put onto apples? I know lots of, again, at farmers markets, or even you're seeing it now probably at supermarkets on a more regular basis, saying, you know, wax-free apples. Why is it put there in the first place? And is that something that's kind of falling away as well?
No, it's not falling away. In the commercial orcharding industry, waxing is used to keep the apples fresh because it's a coating on them and it slows down the drying out of the apple. But they're naturally waxy, and some varieties are more waxy than others. But the reason what happens with the commercial ones is they're washed, where they're harvested, and they're washed and the wax is washed off. And part of that reason for doing that is to get rid of chemical residues, because there are very few organically grown apples on a large-scale commercial basis. There are more and more, but generally speaking, I heard Peter mention Queensland fruit fly, which is a dreadful problem that's growing in Victoria, and there are many other diseases and pests that hit the commercial orchard. And when you've got 20, 30, 50 acres, all of the one variety, you know, it's very hard to do that organically. So the wax and dirt and all sorts of residues are washed off, and then they're re-waxed in the packing shed before being stored. And it helps them to look good, it gives them a shine, and it also gives them that protective covering, and it gets rid of the original covering from the orchard, which may have some sort of chemical residues in it.
Let's have a chat.
And so that's why people would market them as wax-free.
Right. Let's have a chat with Kathy, Rob. She's in Northcote. What was your question, Kathy?
I have a question, Rochelle and Warwick. I'm not sure if you will be able to answer it, but definitely the ABC audience will be. When I was a little girl, my mother, if I stayed home from school with an upset tummy, she would always grate the apple and leave it on the kitchen bench to go brown and juicy. I still prefer my apples that way. And I'm wondering, what is the gas that is given off? You know how bananas give off a gas in the fruit bowl? There must be some sort of gas that's given off to make the apple far more digestible.
Right, so she would do it to help settle your tummy in some way. Yeah. I've never heard of that. Rob, have you heard of that?
Oh, well, that's oxidation. And we actually do that when we're making cider. We mill up the fruit, which basically grates it, in a sense, chops it up. And right before we go and actually squeeze it to get the juice out, I leave it oxidised sometimes for 2 or 3 hours, and that helps give a little bit more flavour and certainly colour to the cider. And I think the oxidation, when you pour red wine, you see wine connoisseurs, they'll swirl it in the glass and sniff it a bit and swirl it a bit more, and they're allowing it to oxidise a little bit in the air, and it kind of brings out more flavour to it. So I can understand why it was done in a more general sense. I guess if I wanted to be a little bit facetious, I'd say it's giving off apple aroma, but yeah. I don't know what.
I love these old remedies, though. They're really good. I mean, the fact that it's helping people instead of coffee, and now it's helping with sore tummies as well. Rob Pilatier is with you. He's from Beaufort Heritage Fruit Trees. Anthony Penhall joins us now as well. He's the co-organiser of the Learmonth Cider Festival, because, Rob, you're just talking about certain apples making great cider. Anthony, first of all, I'm so sorry to hear that you guys, your first cider festival, you were all set up and ready to go just over a week ago, and then lockdown hit, and you literally had bands on stage and cider being poured. Is that right?
Yes. Good morning, Michelle. Yes, it was. Yeah, it was a bit of a body blow, that one. We were hoping to make this our first Learmonth Cider Festival, and everything was in readiness. There were even people on buses on the way. We had cider, basically in the cups. And, with a couple of hours' notice, it was quite a body blow. It's taken a couple of days to get our heads around it. But, look, everything's being done to keep us all safe.
Right.
So we're just keeping our head in that direction. Yeah.
And on a plus side, it shows just the love of cider. The fact that there is a festival and busloads were coming and that you had plenty of stalls there as well. I mean, how different is cider to the point where you can have a festival and have all different types and varieties?
Yeah, look, Rochelle, it was really exciting to see. We had to scale our festival idea back significantly, just due to keeping it safe and outdoors. And but really, the response was incredible. We had a number of tickets from people all over Victoria wanting to come, and then obviously some of those people weren't able to come. So we refunded those tickets and put them back out to sale, and they sold immediately. So there really is an interest in particularly craft cider now, Rochelle, as opposed to things that have been masquerading as cider for quite a few years.
Well, we had a British caller earlier saying, well, you know, we couldn't find the particular types of apples that we wanted to make really good cider here. And we've seen an appetite for cider just increase year after year after year. Is there a particular Victorian signature when it comes to cider, do you think now? Say if it was on the world stage and if you went out for a drink, you'd say, oh, that's a Victorian cider.
Oh, that's a good question. Look, I think... I'll just diverge a little. Tasmania's definitely got itself into a position like that, I think. And Victoria's definitely not far behind it. And the cooler climates and the rich soils and the volcanic terroir we have around here is, I guess it's akin to what's in Tasmania. And we're following close behind, definitely. We're looking in this region, you know, Daylesford, Harcourt, and now Learmonth. You know, they're starting to show that we do produce high quality apples of, you know, the cider making variety, and that goes through into the final product. Absolutely.
And Rob, if you were to pick an apple or two that you think works perfectly for cider, what would be your first choice?
Oh, look, the main Anthony will know them. The main cider varieties, particularly the what we call the vintage ones, where you can make a varietal out of those. So grapes, where wine's varietal, you know, a single variety of grapes. A lot of ciders mixed apples, but things, varieties like Kingston Black, Yarlington Mill, Dabernet, Brown Snout. Brown Snout's hard to get enough fruit from in Victoria, but when it does fruit, it makes the best cider. Stoke Red's another one. You need to be right up in the mountains for that one to work. So they're the sort of varietals, and then there's quite a lot of other ones which I think one of your callers from Gippsland before mentioned quite a lot of variety names. And they're not hard to come by these days. Obviously, you've got to find boutique suppliers or do a bit of grafting yourself. It's not too hard to do to buy for your rootstocks and get a bit of wood grafting.
Lots of people texting in saying that they're grafting. Rob, thanks so much for your time. It's been really interesting speaking with you.
Been a pleasure. Thanks, Rochelle.
Rob Pelletier, he's from Beaufort Heritage Fruit Trees. And just finally, Anthony Penhall is with you. He's the co-organiser of the Learmonth Cider Festival. Anthony, have you seen an increase of people? And I always have images of Homer Simpson trying to make his, you know, his own liquor in the bathtub. But when we go into lockdown, people go, you know what I'm going to try and do? I'm going to try and make my own cider. Like, do you see an increase in people giving it a crack?
Michelle, we have a lot of people talking about having their own little batches going on at home. And, you know, they ask what sort of apples to use and, you know, various little questions on the fly. It's a really lovely natural process in a lot of ways. And as Rob was saying, there are specifics and it's more akin to winemaking than it is to beer brewing. But, you know, it's a lovely natural process and, you know, with a bit of care and a bit of love, you do come up with a product that'll, you know, it may need to be iteration one. You know, maybe next lockdown in might be another one. But most people do come up with a product at the end, and it does. You know, it has a high sugar content, so there is, you know, an alcohol content at the end that is quite pleasing to some people. Yeah, let's put it that way.
And is it too early to ask when you may reschedule, and you're thinking about rescheduling the Learmonth Cider Festival?
Yeah, I've just been listening to the state government news, and look, we're really a bit gun shy now up till any time before Christmas, because I think we just all have to get ourselves going with the vaccination, and any event organisers between now and Christmas will be pretty gun shy. I would say it's going to be a bit of a quiet time, and that knocks on through to the music industry, the sound industry, all of those other people that are connected around us, the caterers. We haven't been able to find a date between now and Christmas, and that's really sad. And but it is what it is right now. We were hoping that we would be lucky, and we weren't. But that's life at the moment, and there's so much uncertainty out there. But
well, people can just keep their eyes and ears out, and the moment it's ready to go, at least shoot us a line and we can let people know. Anthony, thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome, Rochelle. Thank you. Thanks for giving us some time.
That's Anthony Penhall. He's the co-organiser of the Learmonth Cider Festival, and yeah, they were ready to go. Could you imagine? All the little tents are set up. There are busloads of people coming. There were bands on stage. And then with an hour or two to go, it all had to be shut down. I've loved learning so much about apples. And more people are sending in text saying, absolutely, grate an apple and it will help with the sore tummy. I am doing that. I'm putting that into my little basket of things that will help me, children, husbands, friends, whatever it may be, when you have a bit of an upset stomach. If you want to listen back, you can subscribe to the Conversation Hour podcast. Go to the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. That way you've got some great listening over the weekend.